awesome.
I said I was lucky with John getting being here in town, and my luck just keeps rolling because one of my best friends who I play Magic with, we are locked in a battle of goblins versus elves. He is here tonight, too, and everybody, welcome to the stage. Back to the stage, Ben Rathert.
Good evening, everybody. Oh, my gosh. I have been looking forward to this for months. I had this one planned out from, I think, back in November is when I contacted Eric, said, I need to be back on the show. How about May? Because when you have two kids, you need to map your life out that far in advance. And then this all kind of fell together. It's like, actually, we're celebrating Dwight's birthday. I'm like, well, then great, because this works out perfectly. That said, Dwight, it was my honor to beat the shit out of you at Magic earlier. All right. But my brag tonight is actually that Dwight sang at my wedding. I've known him for a number of years, but when Nikki and I were trying to settle on who was going to sing for us for our song, I Will Follow You Into the Dark, we thought of Dwight and it immediately snapped, and he did awesome. Dwight, you didn't sing at my birth, but I do look forward to you singing at my funeral. So. It's coming up here. Speaking of, by the way, this is a big shout out to Nikki, who's got the kids in the hotel room tonight. Thank you very much, babe. I love you.
Yes. Yeah. That's right.
Anyway, Dwight, this story is not about you, but I do appreciate the times that we spend together. As a little boy, I loved trains. Who didn't? I especially loved building the tracks and deciding where the course would be. Around the coffee table, under the piano. At some point, the fascination to build was completely replaced with Legos and Kinects. But before that, I remember one Christmas where I received two electric train sets. One was the classic design, you know, with the big engine and the coal car and the box car, and it was beautiful, and I could see that even as a little boy. But the other train I got was a five-car silver Amtrak car train. It had the emblems of the Amtrak right on the side in great detail. You could see them. Now, it had a propensity to jump off its own track, and the track wasn't very long, but it was my favorite because my daddy drove trains like that. Dad started driving for Amtrak in 1987 after working for about 17 years or so for Illinois Central running freight trains. He chose the switch because it meant he would finally have a fixed schedule so my mom, my sister Carrie, and I would know what days he would be home. But he was still gone a lot, three full days out of every week. He mostly left and came home in the middle of the night while Carrie and I were asleep. Mom almost always got up to see him off or return home again, and I'd often hear them talking in the dining room below where I slept on the landing just at the top of the stairs. It wasn't really a room, and you had to walk through it to get to the other rooms, but I digress. In the wintertime, when my dad would open the heavy front door to go out, a blast of cold air would make it all the way up the steps to my bed on the landing, and I'd feel that. Then he'd be gone. He'd be off to places like Chicago, Memphis, or Greenwood, Mississippi, places very different from Ava, Illinois. Dad being gone a lot was both good and bad for me growing up. He was gone about every other day. We did not always get along that well. I remember recognizing at maybe the age of 7 that Dad didn't know really anything about the X-Men or about the X-Files or Nintendo or any of the things I was actually into as a kid. Strangely, though, I do remember the first episode of Star Trek I ever watched, Genesis, where they all de-evolve. I watched that with Dad. I don't know why that happened, but anyway. Every Saturday, every single Saturday, Dad and I would spend together. Working around town or on the farm or over at his parents, this was my life. My friends would talk about what they did on Saturday. I was on the farm. It's just what we did. I hated it. I'm a kid. I don't want to work in my time off. We know that. But it's what we did. We didn't get along that well in the respect that my dad wasn't the best at explaining things, and I wasn't necessarily the best at following those instructions anyway. Something like, bring those boards over here would end up with a very nicely stacked pile of boards far away from where we need them. For example, maybe I'd change the oil in the car before I and put the new stuff back in before I realized that I didn't change the filter. So things like that kind of made it worse. Whatever, I did well in school, and that made me think, too, that I was actually smarter than him, than a grown man. My dad, who's a smart guy anyway, I've never beaten him at chess. Not once. Teenage men had other thoughts, though. Dad had to be stupid. Regrets of a grown person. Anyway, I love my dad. I really do. We had so many good times together. My feelings with him are about as complicated as your feelings towards your dad. Anyway, about the age of 10, when my school schedule would permit, I would get to go with Dad on his Thursday afternoon runs to Chicago. I loved having my own seat and hanging out with the conductors and getting to go to the snack car. I remember the sheer power of the engine close up and how scary it is to feel it in your chest. I loved those trips because it gave me hours upon hours to read and write and draw, all the things I love to do most. Dad would come back to check on me at the longer stops like Champaign or Urbana, or if we got sidetracked somewhere. Everyone called me Stick's son because that was his work nickname, Stick. Chicago was a completely different world for me. With a cold on my cheeks, I would just stare up at the skyscrapers. Walking through the city with Dad, hearing the music on the street corners, restaurants selling foods I had never heard of, and the homeless huddled between buildings and over steam vents, I would always feel like I was in a movie. And Dad somehow fit right in. It's one of his special talents that he's never out of place. He'll fit right in wherever he lands. I can't recall the number of times people that I had never met before would talk to me and say, "You know, your dad's a great guy." I didn't know how to take that, but it did make me kind of feel proud to be a son. When high school was drawing to a close, I knew that I had to leave home for college. I was offered a full ride at nearby SIU, but made the difficult decision to not go because honestly, if I stayed, my relationship with my mom and dad would have suffered. By that time, I felt it was my place to help Dad on the weekends. I'd grown used to it. It was my role. Yet, I always knew that when college came, I was going to jump in both feet. And somehow, I couldn't do both at the same time. When I got accepted by U of I jumped right in. And I didn't know much about it other than it was a good school, supposedly. I didn't even know what I wanted to do with myself. I just had to go. I had so many fears and doubts, which I did my best to silence in the months to come as I made my decisions about the year ahead. But somehow the fact that Dad's train would be coming right through town made all of this more bearable. Sometimes I would go out to the platform on Friday nights just to meet him for a few minutes while passengers boarded and detrained. I can't count the number of times I would point out to my friends when we were out on Friday nights and heard the train whistle blow across town. "That's my dad," I'd say, still holding on to the same pride that I had when I was 7. Driving the train has its risks. Dad's been involved in at least one major wreck, not his fault, but it reminded us there were all major dangers to this. And there are suicides, too, people who walk right out in front of the track. Obviously, he's had to let a lot of things like that roll off him as much as he could, but it's part of the job. Years ago, Dad told me something that happened to him earlier that week. On the track, you can see about a mile ahead on a clear day. Somewhere up ahead, he could see a large flatbed truck loaded down with steel girders stopped right in his path. Dad was going full speed at about 80 miles an hour or so, and he saw what was coming. He cut acceleration, he threw every brake, but he knew this was not going to be enough. He said that as disaster closed in, he could see clearly into the cab of the truck, and the driver was a young guy, a kid really, and he was still feverishly working. At the last possible second, a huge plume of black smoke erupted from the truck's exhaust stacks and it lurched out of the way. He told me it didn't seem possible that tragedy had been averted. Mom and Dad both retired at the end of 2012, and we threw a huge retirement party for both of them. Mom had been a teacher, a florist, and a rural mail carrier in all the time that Dad had been cruising the steel rails. People traveled hundreds of miles to see Dad, his jovial and helpful attitude compelling his old friends to come and visit him and wish him well. I moved my family back home to Southern Illinois in 2013, and I take my kids to the farm frequently to visit their grandma and grandpa. Last October, Dad called me on a Tuesday night, and with a rarely heard tremor in his voice, he cut to the chase immediately. "Well, son, I've got colon cancer." Apparently, his symptoms have been going on for a few weeks, and they were showing no signs of stopping. His colonoscopy that day was fairly conclusive, and then he called me that night. The next morning, I went to see him on his front porch overlooking the cow pasture while it drizzled rain. He sat perched on a picnic table as he did, uncertain of what was to come. Everyone kept asking me what his chances were, and I always had to respond with stock answers. "We don't know yet. We need more information." My years of medical training did little to give me any comfort. My dad was very sick. There was one test I was waiting on that would tell me what his chances really were. A CT scan of his liver. Liver involvement in colon cancer comes only with dramatic metastases and is a harbinger of a terrible prognosis. We had to wait 2 weeks, and finally a few days after the testing was done, I called Dad on a Friday night and asked him what we knew. Surgery was scheduled for within the month. There would be chemotherapy over the winter before a second surgery in the spring. Then more chemotherapy. His liver was clean. No masses at all. Somewhere, some kid in a stalled-out flatbed truck had stomped on the gas one last desperate time, and the track was clear. Dad's done well since then. He can't work like he wants to right now, and I know that that's working on his mind. He doesn't want to get old, and this is making him feel all the years he's been able to dodge up until now. But this isn't forever. By the end of the fall, he should be done with his chemo. They'll put him back together again. This is not my story. It's your story, Dad. My father is perhaps the person who has most defined who I am. In all my years of school and residency, and even in my job now delivering babies at midnight, I have never struggled much with wanting to quit or say that this is too hard, because my dad keeps working at 2 in the morning. Because tomorrow we've got to move the cows, or fix the fence, or help Greg pour the foundation of his new house, or clean the churchyard, or mow, or anything. If he could do what he needed to do, I could do what I needed to do. My whole thing about it is I'm a father now. I have an almost 4-year-old Henry and a 6-month-old Evie. I think about being a dad a lot and how difficult it is, and the different relationships some of my best friends have had with their dads over the years. I am not destined to be the best dad in the world, far from it. But I can only hope that my kids think of me as well as I think of my dad. Eric, can I have you come on up here? I'm going to set this up here. And guys, we're going to be singing a song in a little bit. You know it. Please join me on the chorus. This song, the City of New Orleans, is the name of the train my father drove, and it's the name of the song we're going to sing. It was popularized by Arlo Guthrie, who I love because my mother bought me Alice's Restaurant for my confirmation. But it was written by Chicago native Steve Goodman. He's the jerk responsible for Go Cubs Go. Seriously, though, Steve Goodman was a treasure, and his music is beautiful, provocative, and funny. And if you don't know him, check him out. But, of course, there's this song. It's for you, Dad.
We standing?
Will you want to sit? I'm cool.
Hey, you know what? Let's stand.
You sure?
Everyone's been standing today.
All right.
Riding on the City of New Orleans, Illinois Central, Monday morning rail. 15 cars and 15 restless riders, 3 conductors, 25 sacks of mail. And all along the southbound Odyssey, the train pulls out of Kankakee, rolls along past houses, farms, and fields, passing trains that have no names, and freight yards full of old black men, and the graveyard of the rusted automobile. Good morning, America, how are you? I said, don't you know me? I'm your native son. I'm the train they call the City of New Orleans. I'll be gone 500 miles when the day is done. I'm dealing cards now with the old man in the club car. Penny a point, ain't no one keeping score. Pass a paper bag that holds a bottle. Feel the wheels now rumbling beneath the floor. And the sons of poor men porters and the sons of engineers ride their father's magic carpets made of steel. Mothers with their babes asleep rocking to the gentle beat, and the rhythm of the rails is all they feel. Good morning, America, how are ya? I said, don't you know me? I'm your native son. I'm a train they call the City of New Orleans. I'll be gone 500 miles when the day is done. Nighttime on the City of New Orleans, changing cars in Memphis, Tennessee. Halfway home, we'll be there by morning. Through the Mississippi darkness, rolling down to the sea. And all the towns and people seem to fade into a bad dream. And the steely rails still ain't heard the news. The conductor sings his song again. Passengers will please refrain. This train's got the disappearing railroad blues. I'll be gone 500 miles when the day is done. I'll be gone 500 miles when the day is done. Love you, Dad.